welcome to another episode of that 4NK podcast with Ari Rosebaum and Dan Vittori. Once again, I am in a freezing hotel room in Kansas City. I don't think I can see my breath freeze, but it's cold here. But anyway, this week's episode, we are going to talk about really something that most plan providers will never say. What really annoys us? And we'd probably be... I'll probably cut it down because it'd probably be, otherwise it'd be a two-hour episode. But we're going to talk about the things that, being a retirement plan provider, I'm an ERISA attorney, Dan's, 316 administrator, TPA, and all that other kind of stuff, consultant. There's a lot of things in this business that annoy us. We're honest about it. I'm a little honest about it. Maybe that's why they don't invite me to the conferences anymore to speak, and I had to start my own. We talked about it at dinner, just some of the things that, annoy me. So let's start off. What topic do we want to talk about? What annoys us? What annoys us about clients?
That's a hell of a question. What annoys us about clients? The unreasonable client that thinks they know more than you do. That type drives me nuts.
Well, for me, those clients usually are attorneys. I always say the two worst clients I have, and it's for different reasons. Number one is lawyers, because just because you're a lawyer means you know ERISA, and of course, that doesn't mean that the case. Number two, the worst clients are doctors, and it's not because they're annoying or whatever. It's just that they don't get back to you. And their plans are usually a lot of, my most trouble plans have been doctor plans.
Yeah, I've got a couple of really rough ones. We've since parted ways with several of them. One, they refuse to provide any data for anything. So we're always behind in testing, behind in all sorts of administrative things. So it's incredibly problematic. I definitely think that what we're going to start doing here going forward is introducing the concept of underwriting opportunities. It's no longer going to be a, come all kind of thing. This has to be more of a partnership. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that annoys me from a 316 perspective. This kind of idea that we're an adversary rather than an ally. That's definitely something that I think we need to do a better job of ameliorating going forward. Me personally, and I think a lot of providers do as well, I think there's this definite kind of gotcha attitude with a lot of HR folks out there. And it's not just 401k vendors, right? It's any kind of vendor. I saw it a lot when I was a consultant at Willis. There's just this kind of attitude that you're always in an adversarial relationship with the client, and they're always trying to find a way to replace you, rather than it be a mutually beneficial relationship. That we sort of work in conjunction to deliver a better program for the benefit of the employees.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And, to me, the most difficult clients are those who don't follow up. You'll ask them a question. Right now I have a client dealing with late deferrals and being part of that Department of Labor Voluntary Fiduciary Compliance Program. And submitted it, and the UL agent had a couple more questions, and the client has gone back to me for months and months and months. And of course, the application got returned back. And this past week, I emailed them, like, if you want me to resubmit it, you got to tell me exactly, more information. These are the two things the agent wants, and if I have to, I'm gonna have to resubmit it anyway. They're gonna question that again. So it's really. It reminds me of the movie Clerks, where, this job would be so great if it wasn't for the customers.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I'll jokingly say that this job that I have is great if it wasn't for the clients. But I jokingly say that most clients are cooperative. Most clients give you what they want. But, I think the problem with uncooperative clients is, as a TPA, if they don't cooperate with you and they do something that's not, you know, let's say illegal, but, you know, non-compliance, you know, I think that, you know, TPA's got to fire them. I run into trouble with a lot of the payroll provider plans, and payroll provider goofed or, you know, claims that it's the plan sponsor's fault because they didn't get back to us, and that's why we didn't file a 5500. But, you know, normal TPAs, if you have a client that doesn't file the 5500s and, you know, they're advised that they got to correct us and they don't want to do it, the TPA fires them because they don't want that liability that goes with a client that doesn't want to cooperate.
Yeah, great. I mean, that's kind of what I was, you know, alluding to earlier. I think providers need to be selective, right? I mean, there's this whole air of, you know, any client's a good client. You got to put food on the table. It's a super competitive industry. And that's true to a degree, but I think for the folks that are practitioners in the industry that are committed to the space, have enough cachet, have established themselves enough to be able to be selective and not have to deal with the headache of a, you know, unresponsive client.
Exactly. Let me see, another topic that annoys networking, LinkedIn stuff. There's a lot of stuff with that kind of annoys me.
What was it today that you were saying?
I got 3,400 people on LinkedIn that I'm LinkedIn with. Some of them are friends. Some of them are people that I worked with in the past. What annoys me is, you know, you get a LinkedIn request and you connect with the person, and I think right off the bat they're trying to sell you something. And what annoys me, working with advisors, and I work with so many advisors around the country, and, you know, most of my work is referrals from advisors and referrals from TPAs. I don't get that many plan sponsor clients. And they, right off the bat, you know, you'll meet an advisor that I don't know from a hole in the wall, and he'll say, oh, you know, this is what I do. Maybe we could sit down and talk and listen. And he's obviously trying to sell me advisory services to me or my clients. And, you know, if you look, I think it's important when you're on LinkedIn to look and identify what people do and who they are. And, you know, that's a great way of trying to avoid, you know, the unpleasantries of, you know, selling people stuff they don't need. And I had that not too long ago where it was a private investigator LinkedIn with me, a local private investigator. And like every 2 or 3 days, he was asking whether we could sit down and talk about his services. Now, as an ERISA attorney, I've never had to use a private investigator. I don't think there'll ever be a time, especially since I don't do litigation. Yet every 2 days he was asking me, and, you know, we always talk about, you know, with my kids, sometimes you got to pick up on the social cues. And one of the social cues you have to, you know, pick up is that when somebody's not answering you, when you bother them every 2 days on LinkedIn, if they don't respond to you the first or second time, they're not going to respond when you bother them the fifth time. But that, you know, that's part of it. And one thing that annoyed me this week was for one of my advisor events, I don't want to say which city, but I was an advisor introduced themselves to me, and I get on the phone with the advisor, and, you know, it's higher up in their advisory practice, and you know, they wanted me to possibly do a webinar. And, you know, the thing with webinars, I do it for free. This is what I do. So, you know, it was interesting, and, you know, it's that part of the country. I didn't know that many advisors out there, whatever. So I checked up with him not too long ago about attending one of the events because it's going to be in his area. And so what does he do? He responds and he says, listen, it's not within our budget. We're going to reset our budgets in May and this, and that. And then I wrote back, you're telling me that the $100 fee to that 401k conference is not within your budget? So, you know, that's that. Listen, you want to tell me you can't come because, you know, you got other things brewing, you got a sales meeting, you got this, you got other events, I'll take that. But don't tell me that the $100 is not in your budget. especially when you wanted to network with me and possibly use me for free for a webinar. You know, you're dealing with a relationship-driven business. I think that you have to understand that any relationship is a two-way street. So when I was dealing with the advice, here's another thing that annoys me. I think when it comes to networking, you have to understand that it takes time to develop relationships. And I've had advisors where I've known them 5-6 years, and then, you know, maybe year 7, they have something for me. You always, you know, it's like planting a garden. You never know when the thing's going to grow. And but then there are some other providers that you work with, and they will never pay out. They're going to be like that slot machine that just doesn't want to pay out. It's not going to pay out. So not too long ago, there's an advisor who I've known for, 6-7 years maybe, never brought me a dime worth of business. And that's fine. But what annoyed me was I sent one of those newsletters out, and he says to me, "Listen, a couple typos in there. Can you fix it, and I'll give it out to my clients?" And I'm a one-person shop. There are typos, you know, here and there. It's been a lot less since I got a program to help me out with it. It happens. When there are typos, and I'm working with advisors that I have good relationships with, and they want me to correct it, you know, from time to time, I'll do that. But this advisor, who is more interested in talking to me and debating me and, you know, wasting my time, and then he's the type of advisor I won't hear from him again in 2-3 years. Except he did thank me for nothing annoys me about LinkedIn when it's your. I didn't know it was my work anniversary for starting my own firm. It's like 9 years now, and people, like, you know, they give that canned response. Oh, congratulations! This and that. And so I actually did congratulate me on my work anniversary. Now I'm probably going to get about 5,000 LinkedIn things about my birthday.
Happy birthday, Ari.
Well, tomorrow's my birthday, but whatever. Anyway, you know, that's some of the stuff on LinkedIn that annoys me, and networking in general. What about you?
Well, I think a lot of your stories sort of had an overarching theme to them. And sort of, you know, ignore the French here, but to a degree, we're all salespeople, and there's a certain amount of bullshit to the art of selling. And what sort of drives me nuts is when people in the industry try and sell you, kind of like what you were talking about on LinkedIn, right? Just be honest. Be honest with the folks that you deal with. Treat them like you want to be treated. I mean, I've had the misfortune, I've had the pleasure of doing business with lots of good people. But I've had the misfortune, and we've spoken about it in the past, of running into some real first-class scumbags. Some people that have stabbed you in the back, folks that I've introduced to a crap ton of clients that stabbed me in the back, ruined relationships, just done all sorts of unsavory things. It's a terrible way to do business. It will catch up to you. I've done my hardest not to sort of react, right? Because I do believe in karma, and I do believe in things evening themselves out in the long run. But just be honest in your business dealings, whether it's with a plan sponsor or a provider, a colleague, a competitor, right? It all comes back. So I think that's one of my biggest peeves. Just folks that are basically full of shit and treat you, you know, like you're something other than a dedicated professional.
Yeah, we're all like, you know, creatures of habit. We all have had different experiences, and I think all the networking stuff and the down part of networking, or somebody's trying to sell you something, it all comes from one event. And many years ago, I was at a networking event, and I met this young guy who was working for some insurance agency. This was, I think, right after the market imploded in 08. So he was a broker, he lost his position, and now he was working with his dad at some larger insurance agency out here in New York. And so, you know, we were talking, and he wanted to network with me. And I was like, okay, whatever. So I went to their office, in right by Grand Central, and all of a sudden I see, you know, I'm waiting and waiting, and all of a sudden I see this weird guy. He's got a mustache. He's obviously like older than me, about 15, 20 years. And he's just like lurking around. But anyway, so I have the meeting with the son, and now that guy who was lurking around was the father. And what I thought was network meeting with the son now was with the father, and the father was pushing everything. And the father really was just interested in just selling me an insurance policy. So it wasn't, you know, let's start a relationship. To me, you know, any type of relationship, there's got to be a mutual risk, you know, there's got to be reciprocity. I'll look into you about your connections and see where I could do that. And, you know, he was trying to sell me a policy, and he's like, oh, I could get you business. And, you know, my experience is anybody tells you that they can make you business or make you rich, they really don't do that. And the funny part of that story was I never, you know, anytime I hear about this agency or whatever, I kind of cringe about him. And I'm always reminded about that experience. So last summer, we were having that 401k conference in Citi Field, the first one, Dwight Gooden, last June. So leading up to the event, I got contacted by another guy from that same agency. And he, again, he's another one of those, wants to start a relationship, this, this, and that, and whatever. I said, oh, he said, or my firm, I said, oh, yeah, I have. And I, of course, brought up that situation, and I named the guy, and he says, oh, yeah, I'm sorry you felt that way. That guy taught me everything I know. So needless to say, that was a buzzkill of mine. And then, you know, of course, when we're talking about the event, he had some excuses as to why he could come to that 401k conference. So, you know, I'm sure it had to do with the fact that I just disparaged his mentor. But, you know, listen, that's one thing I've never wanted to do is go up to people and say, oh, who's your risk attorney? Do you need a plan amendment? Do you need a plan review? You know, to me, it's again, if you know something you know, people know what you do, you tell them what they do, what you do, and you got to build trust. And, you know, hopefully they'll trust you, and hopefully they'll want to develop a relationship with you. And, you know, I think, again, you have to be – to be a successful person in this business, in my opinion, you have to think about other people. You have to think people on the other side of the equation. I think, you know, many years ago when I was working at that law firm that I always joke about, tried to develop relationships with advisors. They would help refer me business. And I remember, you know, talking about what I could do as a risk attorney, how it's different from a TPA attorney and this, this, and that. And, you know, talk about my services and how I charge a competitive fee and all that stuff. And one of the advisors says, well, what's in it for me? And you know what? That's not a bad question to ask. I think that any type of relationship, there needs to be reciprocity. There has to be, you know, you have to look at the other side and see what is in it for them. It's not all about you trying to sell something. You know, a relationship takes time. Relationships are, you know, again, it requires trust. And, you know, if right off the bat you're trying to sell somebody something, to me it's like spam email. They're just going to junk it and throw it away, and they're going to throw you away and just not want to bother having a relationship with you. But that's, again, that's been my experience over time.
Well, relationships don't come easy, right? I mean, whether it's a client relationship or, you know, a relationship with an auditor or an attorney, those things take time to develop, and they're protected, right? I mean, you can't expect an advisor to, you know, open up their entire book to you if you're a new provider just because, you know, you've got the new shiny product or you're a low-cost solution. I mean, there's a certain risk involved in trusting folks, right? And I'm sure all of us, I just told you guys, I've been burned. I'm sure Ari's got a ton of war stories. He shared a bunch of them. Everyone does, right? I mean, they're part of what make you smarter. So my point is we've sort of all, the folks that have been in this business a while, have been around the block enough to sort of see through things. And going back to what I said earlier, just treat people you run into the same way you want to be treated. You sort of, you know, navigate through this industry like that, and it'll provide for a very successful, rewarding career. But if you don't, I don't see you lasting in this industry for too long.
Yeah, I mean, again, you go to events or whatever, and maybe it's a non-retirement plan event, and you know, like an advisor coming up to me and, you know, acting as if I've never met a financial advisor in my life. I know hundreds and hundreds of advisors. I know lots of great advisors. I mean, listen, we're going to be in Kansas City. I know a few good advisors in Kansas City. This is the first time I've ever been to Kansas City. So, you know, somebody from Long Island coming up to me and saying, oh, you know, this is my I'm like, okay, you know what? I just met you. You're trying to sell me something. And if I need advisor services, I'm going to pick somebody that I have a long relationship with and that I trust. And, you know, listen, I've been burned in the past referring business out to people. And, you know, a TPA, maybe sometimes it hasn't worked. And, of course, in terms of relationships, you know, as I jokingly always say, I replaced Matt Hutchinson of the only MEP that he didn't steal from. You know, that was another relationship, that I got burned on, in terms of, you know, having my name attached to a guy who stole, you know, $3 million, from a couple of MEPs because he wanted to be the king of Idaho. He wanted to save the state of Idaho because he was going to take over a bankrupted ski resort. The only problem was he didn't have any money, so he decided that he was going to steal $3 million from a couple of MEPs that he did. So, yeah, we've all been burned, and again, you know, the relationship that we get burned on, it's not, you know, Dan Venturi's not going to burn me. James Holland, who I've known since I started my own practice, he ain't going to burn me. It's the guy I met last week that is more likely to burn me than anybody else. And, you know, again, like I said, it's a relationship-driven business. You have to understand that, you know, being right off the bat and just trying to, you know, sell somebody something isn't just going to really work out. Let's think about other things. What are some of the other things that annoy us? That's a good one. Again, I would typically think it would take me about 2 or 3 hours to figure it all out.
The plan for me, so we're crazy enough, and I've mentioned this a bunch of times, we're crazy enough to, we have an 800 number for participants, and I do it for two reasons. One, we want to take the burden off of the plan sponsor. In general, they tend to confuse things anyway, so it's just better that the participant comes directly to us. Second reason we do it is inevitably most large providers' call centers are probably the worst possible sources of information out there. So, you know, by no means do we mind the calls. It's by design. We welcome them. What absolutely drives me nuts is the folks that will call you literally with their hair on fire for a hardship, as an example. You know, they're looking at an eviction notice and they need the money like tomorrow. And a retirement plan is not an ATM machine, number one. Number two, these folks have had months of visibility as to the problem. And they're calling, you know, and it's like you're the reason that they can't get their money fast enough. So this concept of the retirement plan as an instant source of an immediate money source drives me up the wall.
Yeah, talking about phone calls, I got a weird one. Yeah, the phone calls are sometimes fun, the potential clients. I had one last week. He called me on a weekend, and I don't know how sometimes, like in Google or whatever, my name pops up for an ERISA attorney. So a guy calls me up. He's from Massachusetts, and, you know, Massachusetts, he's a Massachusetts government worker, and he's retiring, and it takes 3 months for them to process his retirement and start paying him out, you know, the monthly pension. So I said, I don't do litigation. And, you know, if the state of Massachusetts takes 3 months, that's what it takes. There's nothing you can really do about it. It's a government plan. It's not really, it's not covered under ERISA. And then he's just going on, well, how am I going to support myself? I'm like, you know what? If you knew that you were going to retire and it was going to take 3 months, you know, like Dan said, you know, it's a sign that, you know, maybe you should be thinking about it. Like, how are you going to support yourself for the 3 months that you don't have a pension? And then he's going on this whole thing, this whole illegal alien rant and whatever. And it's like, you know what? I'm not going to get anything out of this. Listen, I'm not here for the advisor who wanted me to, you know, check out, fix all my typos. Remember one time he wrote out to me, can we have a discussion? It was like he wanted a debate about such and such. I'm like, I'm not interested in debating. Years ago, somebody took my TPA plan provider, but the payroll provider TPA article, and gave it to a client who had one of the payroll providers as TPA. So he calls me up and he wants to have a debate, and he finds all these faults with my article, and I'm like, you know what, I got no time for this. This is my view, this is my article, it's based on my experience. If you like your payroll provider TPA, good luck to you. But it's my opinion. And if he thinks that, such and such is a great payroll provider and a great TPA, good luck to him. That's his opinion. Anytime I publish that article, which I'm probably due in a month to have another version of that, listen, it's my opinion. And my opinion is just as valid as yours. It's just, you know, mine is just based maybe on a lot more experience than somebody else. But, I don't have time for debates. You know, there's not enough time in the day, you know, when you're setting up regional conferences, a national conference, a website, and, you know, some of the stuff, the HR association Dan and I are working on. We don't have time for debating. That's for politics and, you know, if you're running for office. So, that's
filming podcasts.
Exactly. That's another thing that just, you know, going to barbecue places. Going to, bagel places in different parts of the country, that sort of thing. We don't have time for that. I really don't have time for debates and that kind of stuff. What are some of the other things that annoy us? Again, we could go on for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, and look, guys, I mean, I'm sure the vast majority of you that are listening are going to feel the same way, right? To Ari's point, they're outliers on any possible discussion out there. You're never going to please everybody. I think one of the reasons we do this podcast every week is I think a catharsis for us, almost. It gives us an opportunity to sort of cleanse our souls and share a bunch of things with you guys that we hope I'll help your practices. I'll make you guys better advisors, providers, you know, help you guys do your job better. Take from today, I think, just the concept of, you know, just treat other people the way you want to be treated yourself, right? Do you want someone calling you up complaining about typos in your emails or, you know, breaking your chops because you can't get a hardship out to them the next day? Right? I mean, just, it's trite to say, but it's, remember that years ago, maybe 20 years ago, there was that book that came out, and I think we mentioned this in a previous episode, Everything You Learned, Everything Important About Life You Learned in Kindergarten or something.
Right.
It was just so profound and so true. It's not hard, right? It's just, it's not hard. Just think it through and do the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in law school, I didn't enjoy it. I think that they promised a lot of things that they didn't, you know, put out, job opportunities and opportunities on the clinics and so, a lot of other things. I just didn't think that they were very free and transparent in some of the issues of the school. So when I became the editor of the magazine, we had an award-winning magazine for that final year that I was there. I was just beating the head over administration of all these problems that I had with the law school. But I was very critical, but you know, I wasn't one who just sat and complained. I criticized and I said, this is how you could fix it. Of course, I got nothing but heat from a lot of the students and from the administration because, you know, when you criticize, you're being perceived as negative. And, you know, we should only think nice, happy thoughts. And, of course, you know, I graduated, and a lot of the changes that I had proposed were finally implemented. And, you know, I don't want to take full credit for it, but I think I had something to do with the fact that some of these problems were disclosed. And I remember a year later, I was taking the California bar exam after passing New York and passing Massachusetts, so I was taking it with people that I went to school with who had failed the California bar exam twice. So I met one person and he says, you know, Ari, you were right about everything. And when I was in Atlanta, I had a friend of mine attend the event. He has a business in Atlanta. And we, you know, we're just discussing, you know, law school. And he was like, yeah, everything you ever said about that place was right. And I think that this podcast is, you know, we're saying things that annoy us, but deep down, you probably think that as well. These are the things that annoy you. We're more public about it, but you know, I think the great part of it is to realize that you're not alone. Why do I feel like I'm going to sing "You'll Never Walk Alone"?
That's the
Liverpool song.
It's the Liverpool song,
and it's from Carousel.
And I will. Luckily, I don't think my wife ever listens to this stuff. But if you look on my wedding ring, which you can't see, the inscription on the inside of my wedding ring is "We Walk Together," which I borrowed from the good folks in Liverpool.
It's from Carousel.
Well, I'm sure they borrowed. I'm not sure they borrowed it from Carousel. Liverpool's pretty old.
Song is from Carousel. That's just a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical. That's where it comes from.
Definitively. I'm going to have to ask my friend Pete.
That is from Carousel. Okay. So, right. Everybody, Google that. Go on Wikipedia. That is where that song comes from. It's from Carousel. I saw Carousel last summer. That's when I went to Carmine's. Again, we've gone through these experiences. We've discussed it, and deep down, you probably know that you have those similar things that annoy you. And I feel like today's episode is like a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. But, you know.
And understand, nothing changes without commentary, without criticism, right? I mean,
Nothing gets better. If you don't criticize, it never gets better. I remember there was a guy, I don't want to name names, but he was an industry leader. And any time there was a criticism about 401k plans, he'd be, oh, you're anti-401k. And listen, saying that you're for fee transparency because there were a lot of undisclosed fees. There was nothing, you know, you weren't saying anything bad about 401k plans. You were saying something bad about the industry that could have been improved and that was improved. And I think that we are, the industry is a lot better off because we have fee disclosure.
Yeah. We went from A shares in some plans to all index lineups.
Exactly. And, you know, fees were compressed and they're more competitive. And I think, you know, most of us have thrived thanks to fee disclosure, and there was nothing wrong with it. But, you know, this industry head who has since retired, and I think the position is now part of another bigger organization, history doesn't judge him well. Somebody had told me that, you know, that's a friend of his, and I said, yeah, nice guy, but, you know, he was too sensitive when it came to criticism with the industry. And, you know, when the industry does wrong, it deserves to be criticized. We're not perfect people. And I think that criticism, especially in a constructive manner, can only improve the industry, can improve your standing in the business. Listen, when I have that 401k conference, the first time in New York, you know, there were a couple points of constructive criticism that, you know, helped me improve the event, and I'm always open to, you know, improving things. Everything except for giving, not charging admission. That's something I will not change. But we hope that you've enjoyed this episode of that 401k podcast, and, you know.
Before we conclude, I have to get this in because Ari and I are both Star Trek II Wrath of Khan fans. We rented a car, and what would you call it? The shifter?
Right.
The thing that you put in the drive, right?
Right.
So in this particular model, and I won't name the car, but it flashback to Star Trek II, the Genesis machine, the controls, that's exactly how this thing changes gears. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, you rented a Jaguar, which, you know.
I didn't. My wife did.
Not my cup of tea of a vehicle, but, you know.
Nice car.
Yeah, it's got its moments. But anyway.
For when it turns off at the stoplights.
Yeah, when it just starts making weird noises
yeah.
with 13,000 miles on it. But that's expected from a Jaguar.
Yeah.
But anyway, until next week, it's I guess we'll talk about Project X. We actually did mention it, but maybe we did mention it.
Let's tease it. Tune in next week. We will have full disclosure. We're going to make a huge announcement tomorrow at the Kansas City Conference. Project X is happening. It is a reality. It is going live, at least in terms of the announcement tomorrow. We'll have a ton more details on our next podcast, so make sure you guys check in for that.
So, same podcast channel. Take care.
Bye. Have a great weekend, guys. Take care.